wrapped the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings, and it's looking as though she is going to be confirmed as the first Black woman on the Supreme Court. Let's keep in mind, the Supreme Court is not a position that progressives were ever going to benefit from very well. It is essentially existent there to maintain power structures within the law, and those power structures are not progressive in the slightest, and the left is way too far back on the game to really repair that anytime in the next several decades. I don't mean to be alarmist, but I mean, like, that's the truth. The court leans conservative. All the federal judges on the federal benches lean conservative. Even the ones who are liberal and kind of left-leaning lean conservative. This was supposed to be like a left-leaning progressive, you know, judge pick because she was a public defender. So, like, someone who defends, you know, potential criminals or people who are being charged with things. It's supposed to be like the pillar of our justice system, that everyone's entitled to a judge, even the worst among us. And so the idea that you have someone like that rising to the Supreme Court is supposed to be like one of those leftist things, and she's still kind of conservative. So let's not get our hopes up too much for that, although it is a good moment to see this kind of representation on the court, because it'll mean that that American experience will start to factor in the application of this law and the direction of where the law can go, because the court can say the law hasn't figured this out, which is sort of a cue to Congress to pass a law. But these hearings are nothing but political performance, and Republicans are the only ones that were doing most of the performing. That means not only was it a sick show, but there's barely any alternative forcefully rebuking the torrents and distractions that Republicans are offering you. And so I think it's important to analyze these videos from the hearing. They're mostly Republican lines of questioning, and look at the patterns, because I think we can see where the Republicans are going to start to head with their criticisms in the next couple of years when they're campaigning against Democrats. So Lindsey Graham really did a good job setting the tone by storming off, essentially, and finding a way to make this about, you guessed it, Kavanaugh. It's like a distraction has nothing to do with this. There's no reason one judge have to answer for another judge's approval process, but Ketanji Brown Jackson's put in this position. So let's review this.
So you're the beneficiary of a lot. You're the beneficiary of Republican nominees having their life turned upside down. And it didn't work. So I'm hoping that we can have a hearing that's respectful, that's informative, that's challenging. And President Biden has every right to pick who he'd like to pick. That comes with winning the White House. And I've been very inclined to support the picks of people that I would not have chosen. But this is a new game for the Supreme Court.
So there, he's going on this rambling tirade about how, okay, we're going to take the high ground because the Kavanaugh hearing was such a low ground. As though punting one of Obama's Supreme Court picks until after an election where he was replaced by Republicans, so you can get an extra Supreme Court pick, wasn't the low ground. You can go back and forth on this, really. Like, it's completely dumb, but the GOP is playing a different game. And the Democrats are asleep at the wheel for that game. And so Lindsey Graham melted off and stormed off multiple times during the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearing. Nearly twice. It was so performative. These were meant for like Fox News moments. But there are moments where they're, you know, testing the waters on critical race theory and figuring out how they could get Ketanji Brown Jackson on that. And so here is Corbin trying to get her on that.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing the merits or lack of merits of same-sex marriage. I believe the states and the voters can choose what they will, and that's their prerogative, and I think that's legitimate. But when the court overrules the decisions made by the people, as they did in 32 of the 35 states that decided to recognize only traditional marriage between a man and a woman, That is a act of judicial policymaking, is it not?
Senator, the Supreme Court has considered that to be an application of the substantive due process clause of the 14th Amendment.
Well, one of the things that concerns me is here is an example of the courts finding a new fundamental right that is mentioned nowhere in the document of the Constitution, that's the product of simply court-made law that we're all supposed to salute smartly and follow, because nine people who are unelected, who have lifetime tenure, whose salary cannot be reduced while they serve in office, five of them decide that this is the way the world should be.
And never mind that Congress people are the ones that make the laws. It's supposed to be the judges that interpret them. And never mind that's all a facade, because these judges have liberal slants and conservative slants of interpreting these laws. There's a ton of things that weren't in the Constitution originally. And there's a ton of things that were allowed in the Constitution originally. The reason that the Constitution, most, you know, modern democratic documents, or attempting to be democratic documents such as it, are revels because those things can be changed. In fact, Americans have done a really bad job of changing the Constitution. We haven't made a change in this Constitution in several generations. But the previous version, iteration of the Constitution, wouldn't have allowed Ketanji Brown Jackson to vote. It would have made it very hard for her to be a Supreme Court judge, let alone make it past one of the tests it would have taken to purposely weed out people of color who would have been lynched if they tried to get an education to try to pass that test. Needless to say, the Constitution's changed a little bit. The Constitution was changed to adjust the drinking age and then adjusted back. So you can do a lot of these constitutional originalists are ridiculous, because originally in the Constitution it was made so you could change it and update it. Nevertheless, Ted Cruz is going to get his stupid on, because what else would he do? And of course, he's going to bring on his favorite bugaboo, some shit about cancel culture.
Anti-Racist Baby by Ibram Kendi. And there are portions of this book that I find really quite remarkable. One portion of the book says, babies are taught to be racist or anti-racist. There is no neutrality. Another portion of the book, they recommend to babies confess when being racist. Now, this is a book that is taught at Georgetown Day School to students in pre-K through second grade, so 4 through 7 years old. Do you agree with this book that is being taught with kids that babies are racist?
I do not believe that any child should be made to feel as though they are racist, or though they are not valued, or though they are less than, that they are victims, that they are oppressors. I don't believe in any of that. But what I will say is that when you asked me whether or not this was taught in schools, critical race theory, my understanding is that critical race theory as an academic theory is taught in law schools. And to the extent that you were asking the question, I understood you to be addressing public schools. Georgetown Day School, just like the religious school that Justice Barrett was on the board of, is a private school.
Okay, so you agree critical race theory is taught at Georgetown Day School?
I don't know, because the board is not, the board does not control the curriculum.
Oh my God, Ted Cruz was trying. Private schools can do what they want to. They can assign whatever curriculum they want to. Whether she agrees with it or not, whether you agree with the curriculum or not, it's a free country, especially in a private school. If you don't like it, leave it. Go to a different school. Free market, free choice. This is the stuff that Ted Cruz pretends to be a fan of when it fits his ideology, but tries to weasel around when it doesn't. And ultimately, at the end of the day, she's on the board. She doesn't decide the curriculum. That's left up to the teachers. So It's another failure from Ted Cruz. But again, this is an attempt. The right wing is going to use this as a thing to spin in the media by saying, oh no, one of the lawyers in the Supreme, one of the judges in the Supreme Court is a follower of critical race theory. Boo! Scary. You have Lindsey Graham also picking into the race baiting, and that's what this ultimately is. These are questions that are meant to kind of point out that Ketanji Brown is blackity, black, and that's supposed to scare the audience of Fox News.
Every group that wants to pack the court, that believes this court is a bunch of right-wing nuts that are going to destroy America, that consider the Constitution trash, all wanted you picked. And this is all I can say, is the fact that so many of these left-wing radical groups that would destroy the law as we know it declared war on Michelle Childs and supported you is problematic for me.
So it's guilt by association. Keep in mind, if you're actually on the left, you don't, yeah, I mean, like, you're almost with Lindsey Graham, like, you don't like the idea of the Supreme Court. You, like, think the Constitution is trash, etc. Sure, thanks for playing, right? But then the left didn't have a Supreme Court pick. Like, this was fine. This was, like, better than, obviously, a right-winger, but it's self-defeatist. It's only meant to play to a Fox News audience. It was important to remember that doing a lot of these hearings. Marsha Blackburn goes in for her little bit of Constitution baiting as well.
So you agree that the Constitution does not mention the right to an abortion, and yet, through one of the most brazen acts of judicial activism, our Supreme Court created the right through Roe v. Wade. This is why Americans, this is why so many women that I've talked to are really concerned about who sits on the federal bench.
Again, much like the thing with Corbyn, this is the Constitution that you can change should you want it to. And also the Supreme Court, it's up to their interpretation of the laws that exist. So if these congresspeople don't like the laws, they can change them. That'll put them in the position of answering to their constituents why they want to take away their abortion rights from them. Ball would be in their court in that case. And this next clip really made the rounds because this goes into their anti-trans battle, which goes into their war on pedophiles and child predators. So they're trying to loop in the LGBTQ community with this QAnon fear and then say that, oh, these pedophiles are the ones who kept Trump out of office, so make sure you vote for Trump again. It's really deep. It's really weird. But that's what they're really laying the groundwork for. And they're doing it at the level of the Supreme Court, which is scary for the way they're going to try to use the Republican base to attack our institutions. Like, this is World War II Germany stuff.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
The meaning of the word woman is so unclear and controversial that you can't give me a definition?
Senator, in my work as a judge, what I do is I address disputes. If there's a dispute about a definition, people make arguments, and I look at the law and I decide.
Well,
so I'm not.
The fact that you can't give me a straight answer about something as fundamental as what a woman is underscores the dangers of the kind of progressive education that we are hearing about. Just last week, an entire generation of young girls watched as our taxpayer-funded institutions permitted a biological man to compete and beat a biological woman in the NCAA swimming championships. What message do you think this sends to girls who aspire to compete and win in sports at the highest levels?
Senator, I'm not sure what message that sends. If you're asking me about the legal issues related to it, those are topics that are being hotly discussed, as you say, and could come to the court.
So the Republicans got what they wanted from that, which is the lawyer's not going to fall for your game of culture war issues of what is a woman, because if you don't answer the way they want you to, which is a woman is this rigid example of a person who stays and cooks and cleans all the time and keeps for the family, then you will be scrutinized by massive parts of the Republican Party. And judges are supposed to be above this like culture war nonsense. In the reality, in the way they practice, no, they're not, but they're supposed to be a cut above that, at least in theory. And so what do you get as this end result here? Is trying to tie this judge to a caricature of a movement that is seen as taking away trophies from people training in sports, which is barely happening. Like, I think someone mentioned however many tournaments there are in college sports and high school sports, and however many versus how many trans athletes there are versus how many are like in the top echelons. You're talking about overturning a policy because you're upset about like three people. It's insane, but it's not because, I mean, yes, because they hate those three people and the many more people who are trans in this country, but because there's way more than three people that they can propagandize to, and they can weaponize their fear and distrust of things that are changing into anti-partisanship against the Democratic Party. And so I have one more clip, because this is where it gets to be the most insidious, because it's a direct tie into QAnon behavior.
We're talking about 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds. He's got images of these. The government said added up to over 600 images. Gobs of video footage of these children. But you say this does not signal a heinous or egregious child pornography offense. Help me understand that. What word would you use if it's not heinous or egregious? How would you describe it?
There was Josh Hawley, complete Republican clown, trying to hammer home the idea that Ketanji Brown Jackson was too light on a sentencing of someone who had distributed perverse graphic images of children. This person got sentenced. The idea of like how many more years they got is within like the requirements, so to speak, of the Fed. It wasn't like Ketanji Brown Jackson went to the absolute minimum, but like going to the absolute maximum, what more does, like, you have to get down to like what more does adding more years solve other than like making you feel better necessarily, right? And what she's saying, like, and what she said in other clips is that what Ketanji Brown Jackson was saying in other parts of that whole hearing when I'm multiple hours long is that, look, she followed the procedures for how you rule on these things, and you can choose to be overly punitive. You can choose to think about what is the best for rehabilitation. And I, Dan, honestly don't think that our penal system is any form of rehabilitation can possibly provide that. But if Ketanji Brown Jackson thinks that the lower end of rehabilitation helps with that, especially because this person was, you know, around the age of 18 or 19 when that happened, then maybe that's a consideration that the judge makes. Maybe that's a consideration for how the law looks at these cases and what's required as a mandatory minimum, quote unquote. But that's a debate that Josh Hawley can have as a congressperson, as a lawmaker. This is a judge. But this is all combining into a QAnon moment for the right wing, because they're going to use the energy from that to fearmonger and try to paint the Democrats as, yes, seriously, aligned with child molesters. It's sick, it's gross, but it's par for the course for the Republican Party now. So I talked on a recent episode of Power Report how I am going to continue hammering on the fact that there are people who call themselves leftists, such as Kyle Kulinski, who I generally consider one of my friends, but that is friendship is being tested more and more by the day, that these people are giving pseudo-right-wingers a pass for their bigotry by cherry-picking instances in which they are amenable to the left, to the detriment of the fact that more often than not, they are counterintuitive to leftist priorities. So much so that it is proving to be a danger to people on the left's lives. So that sounds very hyperbolic. That sounds very intense. And I brought this up during the instance where a bunch of racial statements came up of previously racist statements that Joe Rogan said, and Kyle Kulinski saying, listen, Joe Rogan's not a racist. Joe Rogan's not this horrible guy. I talked to Joe Rogan once about this issue and that issue and the other issue, and not even that many issues. He talked about like one or two issues max. And Kyle said, listen, Joe Rogan can be changed. His mind can be changed. He is a friend of the left. He is listens to right wingers, and that's totally fine. But ultimately, he's an ally. Crystal Ball, who is Kyle Kulinski's girlfriend, which is amazing to me, just says that if there's anyone you could listen to and reason with, it's Joe Rogan, which is ridiculous. But nevertheless, there is a trend that I'm pointing out here, and I'm glad I'm highlighting because other people are seeing. I've gotten a ton of great comments and a ton of people who are other leftist creators who have pointed this out. That Kyle Kulinski just routinely cherry picks, as I'm saying, he cherry picks good moments from Joe Rogan only to ignore the extreme harm he's doing in the long run. And so here's a clip he did very recently about Joe Rogan dismantling and laughing at an anti-gay guest, basically. It's supposed to show here how Joe Rogan is really adept at having someone on his show and challenging them on their perspectives in a polite way, but in a way that ultimately helps them get to the right side of the issues here. And it's supposed to be on gay marriage, so this is billed by Kyle Kulinski as being promising. And look, Joe Rogan is aware on LGBTQ issues. He's ultimately doing good in convincing people of what's right or not. So let me get into the relevant part of the clip here that's played, and then we'll talk about it a little bit and then go into Kyle Kulinski's analysis and why it is very short-sighted.
So you think that if someone's gay, they have a gay relationship, no kids. But what about if they adopt kids?
They shouldn't have kids. You're not in a space for children.
But if they want to adopt kids,
you want to fuck somebody up. You want to put somebody in a position to be fucked up. It's like getting a dog, but not having no fucking place for the dog to be.
A kid who gets adopted by gay parents, you feel like automatically they're going to get fucked up?
They're going to be fucked up automatically.
Really? You don't think that they can? I have a neighbor in California, and they had a surrogate raise their kid. They're two gay guys, and they mixed their sperm up so they didn't know whose it was. And they hired a lady to get pregnant, and they shot it in there. And the first lady wanted to keep the baby. She's like, "Fuck it, I'm keeping the baby." And they had to let her keep the baby because it was inside of her body. She grew it, and she was so attached to the baby that by the time it was born, she did not want to give up the baby.
Exactly.
And then they hired another one, and then the second one gave up the baby, and the kid. I watched him grow up. He was my neighbor for probably 8 years, somewhere around there. I was friends with the gay couple, friends with the kid. Kid seemed fine. He seemed normal. Come by the house on a skateboard, hang out. He seemed like a normal kid. Hung out with my kid. He seemed okay to me. You don't think that's possible? You have a look on your face like there's no fucking way. Look at the look on your face.
Okay. This guy is asserting that it would be difficult to explain to a kid how gay people work, which is really funny. More on that later. And B, that if you have a kid of gay parents, that kid's automatically going to be messed up. Never mind that, you know, the vast majority of relationships still that are going on right now are with like straight couples. And, you know, a lot of people have stories of their parents being less than great to them, of broken households, of divorces, and these couples are straight. So there are so many studies that say that gay kids actually end up in more stable situations and better households, things like that. And if a gay parents are adopting, for example, imagine how much better that is than being in an adoption situation where a lot of those houses for adoption are not really good situations or situations that will be stable and conducive to growth or upward mobility for those orphans, right? So there's so many ways this is wrong. And you can see how Joe Rogan sort of like uses his like anecdata, his, hey bro, listen, I had an experience one time and therefore I think I'm really right kind of mode of thinking. And in this way it works, because when you're communicating to that kind of person, you know, bro to bro in that really kind of sense, it's a little bit disarming there. But I think Kyle, in cherry picking this moment, gives a little bit too much credit to what Rogan is doing here. And you can kind of see it from his reaction, because like he's very elated from how this goes. Let me just play this reaction really fast.
Wow. Wow. Holy shit. So I think Joe handled that well. He gave the counter argument and then he was like, he wasn't laughing with him because dude wasn't laughing. He was sort of laughing at him for his ridiculous and bigoted position on this. So let's break this down.
Yeah. Let's go Joe, who is taking on the bigot here. It's so insane. So the video goes on to like sort of just go overly into detail with like what is happening there, mentioning like a lot of things I just mentioned with the statistics that go against being like anti-gay in this way. But what does this video serve to do? Ultimately, it serves to go to Kyle Kulinski and his almost million followers who think of themselves as left of center, believing in, you know, free speech absolutism, being anti-war, but also otherwise broadly leftist politics. And the counterpoint to all of this is that the person he's defending, Joe Rogan, is one of the biggest transphobes in the media today. And so to do an entire video about, look at how good Joe Rogan is at addressing an anti-gay bigot, and not talk about the treasure, like, not treasure trove, because again, that's a bad analogy, but to not talk about the huge backlog of anti-trans propaganda that Joe Rogan has spread on his show. I mean, the countless and countless, you know, just random conversation stars about, hey, bro, what do you think about transgender people in sports? Because I think with some sports is okay, but like, you know, there's differences between a man and a woman. And it's like, you know, it's this contrived thing he talks about with comedians and politicians and people who have like no opinion or like no real like actual informed opinion on it whatsoever. They're just sort of like talking out of their ass, because that's the point of the Joe Rogan podcast, is you get people who are celebrities in their own right to talk out of their ass for 3 hours, and somehow that entertains people. But you have instance upon instance upon instance, it's really like countless and brazen, really, of Joe Rogan just being wildly, madly transphobic here. There's one article that was done in Men's Health in July of 2022 talking about Joe Rogan spreading transphobic hate speech. And it basically stems from interviews that Joe Rogan has had with certain people. And you know, like when you have an interview on the Joe Rogan podcast, that's not just Joe Rogan asking questions and, you know, real back and forth, real dialogue between each other. It's not like Joe Rogan's thoroughly researching all of the guests. He's sort of just like, you know, what would a lay person ask in response to these things? And so what you actually get is these people get a 3-hour platform to speak to Joe Rogan's very gullible audience, including Joe Rogan himself, who has a default to agreeing with what his guests say in order to just keep the conversation moving, in order to stay mostly peaceful. So you can basically put any person in front of him and he will agree with them for a period of time. What matters is what actually he sticks with, ideologically speaking. So we had a guest on at one point who wrote the book Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. And as it's noted in the article, Schreier invalidated the lived experience of trans and non-binary kids and teens, made numerous dangerous, entirely unsound false equivalencies, comparing transitioning among teenagers to historic adolescent phenomena such as eating disorders, self-harm, and the occult, calling this age group the same population that gets involved in cutting, demonic possession, witchcraft, anorexia, and bulimia. She described wanting to transition as a contagion with the potential to infect other children with the same ideas, drawing yet more scientifically baseless parallels with eating disorders. Anorexics, they're always really careful when they put them together. They have to be in hospital wards because we know that it will cause them to spread. Which is all just wild misinformation about a lot of these, you know, a lot of different disorders, mental illnesses. But it's also to kind of create this panic of people who don't even think about this and go, wait a minute. If you're listening to this and you're a cisgender person and you go, I would never want to do that. I can't believe that anyone could be like convinced to want to be trans or to want to be gay. How can anyone be convinced that? You could never do if that's not you, then you're on the right side. In the sense that you understand how flimsy this argument is. Because if you don't feel like you can be convinced to whomever you're attracted to, then that's kind of the point. People learn and adapt to what they're attracted to. And rather than teaching people to repress these things they might be feeling because they only see certain things represented, or they see things represented in media without context, people can have things explained and said, okay, listen, people can be attracted to men and women and people who don't neatly fall in either category because there's the sexual classification of man and woman, and then there's the gender classification of man, woman, non-binary, transgender, all these other different things. And by the way, there's not even the two male-female sex classification because intersex is a category as well. But these are scientific nuances that, after what, 1,700 episodes, have not made it on Joe Rogan's podcast yet? But it's okay, because there's one instance, there's a couple instances that Kyle Kulinski can point out in which Joe Rogan has been really nice towards gay people. Lesbians, bisexuals, I don't know. I guess they're like half gay, so it's all right, but, you know, trans people, that's way too much. Again, the countless segments on so many podcasts about, should transgender people be swimmers? Should transgender people be boxers? Should they be allowed to compete in sports with other, like, men or women? Like, is it really fair? Like, when these are small numbers of people on the margins, like, to be an athlete and to be that successful and then to go through the transgender experience, it's absolutely wild. And, like, this talk has consequences. More than half of transgender and non-binary youth seriously considered attempting suicide last year. And these are statistics that are very common in the LGBTQ spaces. And they were really high in the early 2000s and 2010s before marriage equality was legal in America. And Republicans were way more outright with how anti-gay they are. We're getting a resurgence of that right now, which is really sad to see how much things can retract back socially and even in the law, because you're getting these basically don't say gay bills where you're not allowed to talk about marriage equality or anything like that at all in schools up to a certain grade level. And again, they're trying to spin it as, oh, you're indoctrinating kids because y'all are pedophiles, when in reality it's giving kids the vocabulary and understanding, much as they would go see Snow White or Rapunzel and wondering why, oh, there's a man and woman kissing in that. I'm really young. Why is that going on? You can explain the context for, okay, well, adults do this in a love context, and you can keep it age appropriate, but to just say, oh, I don't know what's going on, don't worry about that, then you're going to have these 5-year-olds figure it out for themselves, and it just won't end very well, especially with the internet. So there are so many other instances of Joe Rogan's ugly transphobia that I am just going to start rolling video clips now. I definitely want to shout out the Serfs for their coverage of this as well, and continuing to hit on some of the dumbest things that Joe Rogan is saying, on the dumbest misinformation that Joe Rogan has on trans people.
These gender or these hormone blockers, and you're allowing children to make decisions at a very young age that will affect them literally for the rest of their life. And it's not like it's a 100% success rate. There's a lot of kids who go through gender reassignment surgery that are very regretful. There's websites less dedicated 1%. To it. You can less read all these personal accounts. It's that for some of these people that don't transition, that wanted to transition when they're young, they wind up just becoming gay as they get older. And the problem is, I think for some people, it is the right choice. For some people, if you got them on hormone blockers 99%. And they transition to be a woman, they might 99%. Ultimately be happier. That's real possible. 99. But they might not, too. And so when you're in this 1%, situation where you talk about a minor and you use absolutes, like this is where they want to be, this is their true gender, this is what they should do, and then you encourage them, like, and you lead them along.
If it was 70%, I'd still be advocating for it. I would be like, over 70% of people who do this don't regret it, and it improves their lives. It dramatically reduces suicide rates amongst trans youth. This is a net benefit. I would still be giving that as a response. It's fucking 99. It's over 99. Like, holy shit. Like, where else do you have these kind of talking points where you're like, I mean, there's a less than 1% occurrence of this, so I think we need to focus on this as being a two-sided argument.
And that's really well put there. It's just like, once you put any of Joe Rogan's main talking point bugaboos under even the slightest amount of scrutiny, it doesn't hold up. When you actually bring some facts in there, when you have someone else besides Jamie Google it and look it up, his tepid producer who, listen, he doesn't have journalism or news credentials, but Jamie's presented, the producer of Rogan, who like Googles things from time to time, is presented as being the voice of reason. Oh, they'll Google it, and this guy will just search and click on the first 2 links or so, and that'll work out. There's no actual literacy or research. I have another clip of Rogan here, where he again continually belittles the trans experience. And the audio is a little bit iffy here, but you'll hopefully get the gist of what's being said.
Some women wish they were men. They feel like they should have been a man. You know, there's always been that. Like, it's not fake, right? There really are people that have these thoughts. The 100%. Problem is, it becomes a protected subject, and then you get praised for transferring your gender, for changing your gender.
Correct.
And then it gets exciting for people to talk about, and then you get chastised for even discussing it in any weird way. And then people who were marginalized for being like genuinely dumb people, if they transfer over and become another gender, then they get praised. Like, there's been a lot of people that were like idiots, but then they become trans, and now all of a sudden we think they're amazing.
So there he goes, like, there are people who are dumb, or they're idiots, or they're stupid. They have some issue that is making them want to transition. They're broken as people, and that's making them want to transition. That's the guy Kyle Kulinski says is reasonable. That's the guy Kyle Kulinski says is good at convincing bigots that people of the queer community are okay. the guy who says trans people are broken in the brain is the guy that Kyle Kulinski wants people on the left to truthfully believe is an ally. This goes back to my original point that if Kyle Kulinski is making these takes when we obviously see these things, I have to seriously question my one-time friend Kyle Kulinski's ability to be a realistic political prognosticator. Is he telling the truth when he's doing his political analysis, or does he have an agenda that is about chasing his next million subscribers, getting his next Rogan appearance? What is this really about? Because it's really about protecting the left and what it's doing. This isn't happening. And I could go on. There's the hat tip that Steven Crowder, there's a hat tip that Joe Rogan did to Steven Crowder, who's done a number of transphobic bits. There's the fact that he defended the God hates the F slur, you know, play on words reference that Steven Crowder was using. Like, Joe Rogan has shown he is perfectly ready and willing to deal within transphobia to build his audience and make a point or make his stance. And Kyle Kulinski goes, no, no, look at it. Even as all these bills are passing where it's illegal to even acknowledge that trans people are existing at a time when trans people are doing self-harm at higher and higher rates, when they're facing more and more violence, Joe Rogan is actually an ally. The worst part about all of this is that Kyle Kulinski brags about the ability to change Joe Rogan's mind. But I don't know if Kyle has it in him. I don't know if Kyle honestly has. I don't know what Kyle's stance on trans people is. I hope it's good, but I don't know if it's informed enough to be able to inform Joe Rogan. Because the issue with Joe Rogan is he's a person who is constantly listening to a bad game of telephone with his political opinions. And occasionally, someone on the phone will be Cornel West or maybe even Kyle Kulinski or someone on the left who's somewhat smart on these things. But most of the time, he shuns those out and listens to his right-wing drinking buddies. Kyle is simply not equipped to address these big picture issues, especially when they touch things that are beyond the experiences of the American white male lifestyle. And it's very clear in videos I've mentioned before, and including this of Kyle. So I DM'd Kyle about this blind spot the last time I did a segment on this, and I've sent tweets about it, and I've gotten a ton of responses about it. It's currently my pinned tweet. I've seen people reach out to me I've never heard from before. I've gotten fellow leftist content creators who I will continue to work with and start working with and continue making a fuss about this, who are saying, yes, I agree with you, what's going on, that Kyle's asleep at the wheel. I promise you, and as I did, and I'll reiterate, and as I did in the other video, I will become unignorable on this issue. And I'm also willing to talk to him on his show, or to him come on my show, or however he wants to do this, to work out how dangerous what he is missing is really starting to get for the left. So yeah, if any other leftists want to help me boost this issue, I'll go on your shows as well. Just get in touch. But I want this to be a productive experience. I want to show this can be a productive experience. And we can do this in a way that is productive and not ugly. Or we can do this in a way that I know will get results, but it'll end up kind of ugly. And I don't want to do that. But I will become unignorable. So one of the wildest things I saw over the past month was Dave Rubin announcing that he was having twins, two children, with his gay partner, also named Dave. Now, I've known that Dave is gay and has a partner also named Dave, and I've known this for a while because I used to work at TYT with Dave Rubin, and like many of the characters that have come through TYT, I have some stories and information about them and what it was like around them, and some interesting recollections about, or some interesting thoughts about what they've become in the years since we interacted more closely. But the crazy thing that happened was the absolute burn and reaction that you saw from people on the right, that a fellow right winger, someone they agree with on everything else ideologically, at least they think, is turning on them or is bad because, you know, it's Republicans are also built on ostracizing gay people so much. And so it's funny because Dave Rubin made this whole bit about his transformation from going from the left wing to the right wing. He made this whole video called Why I Left the Left for Dennis Prager and Prager University, a YouTube channel, basically throwing everything that the left does and works hard for under the bus. But let me start in the order I want to. So you have the tweet where Dave and Dave are announcing their two twins. Hopefully they have different names. Hopefully Dave gets a different idea like there. Can't put it past him though. But you look just over here and you see some of the responses like, don't call yourself a conservative if you celebrate this. How is this not illegal? Imagine robbing your mother of her child after 9 months, but it's okay because you paid her tens of thousands of dollars. I can't imagine growing up without a mom. How is this okay? Wow, never knew renting a mother's room was checks note conservative. This ain't it, Chief. Feel bad for the kids. Dave Rubin's own fans are responding to this, and they're throwing him under the bus. And you almost feel bad for this. I should almost feel bad for this because I am a queer person who used to work with Dave Rubin, and Dave Rubin sold his own career out to become friends and get the money from more Republicans. And now they've turned on him. But this has been a long time coming. So this all started with what I thought was a really amicable way of leaving. And a lot of people don't really reference this clip ever, but when Dave Rubin was going to leave TYT, he announced it. Things were really smoothly. He was going to come back on the network again. And he was just going to a different place that gave him a better job offer with different hours and apparently like different set of resources that would have been more useful to him. And apparently a slightly more favorable salary, which like God bless. And yeah, that was the end of it. But it seemed like things were going to be really happy. I mean, you could even look in this clip that things seemed to be going well before the Fire Nation attacked.
Super appreciated. We're positive. We're going to do great stuff at Riot. So God bless.
Well, thank you. And, you know, we had lunch or breakfast on Saturday, so we did a lot of this, but I guess we got to do some of it publicly also, right? You know, the last 2 years here, I had no idea what I was walking into. I didn't really understand the YouTube space. I loved politics. I knew who you were. You know, my feelings about cable news and all this. But I had been a radio guy on Sirius XM, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And Steve made me this great offer to just try something. And very quickly, I learned that there were people that thought like I did politically. And my politics are all over the map in a lot of ways. But that there were people that we could agree on things and it was okay, and we could disagree on things, it would be okay. And as I said to you on Saturday, you know, especially when in certain foreign policy things, me and you have pretty severe disagreements on things, but literally not once in 2 years here did you ever, or anyone at TYD ever, tell me what to say or that I can't say this or say that or anything like that. And to me, that is, that's the best thing about what we do here.
That's insufferable. Anyways, so yeah, things were on good terms. Dave Rubin said that he was able to have his agreements and disagreements very freely on TYT, which is what I think most people feel from working there. Then, shortly after, you get Why I Left the Left. And then this is the all-time classic. Let's play this.
Do you believe in free speech? Do you believe that people should be judged by their character, not their skin color? Do you believe in believe these things? You're probably not a progressive. You might think you're a progressive. I used to think I was. My show, The Rubin Report, was originally part of the Progressive Young Turks Network. Progressives struck me as liberals, but louder. Progressives were the nice guys. They looked out for the little guy. They cared about women and minorities. They embrace change. That's not progressive, that's regressive. Today's progressivism has become a faux moral movement hurling charges of racism, bigotry, xenophobia, homophobia, Islamophobia, and a slew of other meaningless buzzwords at anyone they disagree with. The battle of ideas has been replaced by a battle of feelings, and outrage has replaced honesty. Diversity reigns supreme as long as it's not that pesky diversity of thought. This isn't the recipe for a free society, it's a recipe for authoritarianism. For these reasons, I can no longer call myself a progressive. I don't really call myself a Democrat either. I'm a classical liberal, a free thinker, and as much as I don't like to admit it, defending my liberal values has suddenly become a conservative position. So if you think people should be able to say what they think without being punished for it, that people should be judged by their behavior, not their skin color, and that people should be able to live the way that they want to live without government interference, then there's not much left on the left for you. I'll keep trying to explain that to progressives until I'm totally left out. I'm Dave Rubin of the Rubin Report for Prager University.
And the dissension into grifting began. And so here's the thing that I was noticing that, you know, people at TYT felt, but it took a while for us to really get it out there and explain to people that, no, Dave had really chosen to take the bait and become useful for the Republican Party and their propaganda. And when we would assert that he was just being used, people would say, oh, you're being mean, you're being too harsh for him. Dave Rubin can think for himself, but no, it was pretty clear that he was being used, so much so that people were brazenly being honest with people like Dennis Prager were being brazenly honest with how he was being used.
I want you to continue to say you're a liberal because you're of great use to good values.
Well, don't worry, I'm not doing it for your use of me. I'm doing it for myself.
No. Yeah. It's like Christians who say to me, you know, oh, we would love you to come to Christ, but you are so valuable to us as a Jew when you defend us Christians. Yeah. And they're right. You are valuable in the best sense of the word. Because the America needs people who are clearly liberal and who, and to be honest, and fall into the category of kosher as gay,
yeah,
to say, hey, hello, the conservatives are not hate mongers. Hello, they should be heard. And maybe every so often you should read National Review,
right,
or watch a PragerU video.
These motherfuckers are literally holding cigars. And let me just say, I mean, what I love is that when he says, like, it's so good for the brand that you say you're liberal. It's like there's, it's like these moments. That is what makes Dave fascinating.
Man, I miss Michael Brooks. Just even hearing his laugh in that clip. Literally, what a guy. And so, yeah, Dennis Prager talked about, yeah, you are very useful in that way. And he tried to walk it back because he caught what he was doing. It was getting kind of offensive there. But why I left the left was the very first blow. And Rubin Report would later become funded by a group called Learn Liberty, which is funded by Republican mega donor Charles Koch, who in the Koch Industries is the America's second largest private company. And they're choosing to stay in Russia and support Putin's demented regimes. They can continue to make goods and profit off of the region. You know, just what classical liberals really want and dream of is to support the Russian regime right now. But yeah, he would go on to attack TYT. It would begin to abandon the left of center views that he claimed to hold closely for years. He had conservatives on his show, but wouldn't challenge their ideas. These would be outright white nationalists who would talk about the extermination of people of color. And he would just bat an eye, literally turn the other cheek conveniently in that way. Rubin said that challenging people just wasn't his interview style, even though he would invite controversial guests, and his main point of controversy with them would be, isn't it weird how you're controversial and can't just talk about your ideas? Your ideas themselves are not really controversial, but people hate you for some reason, and that's weird. You should say whatever you want, regardless of what it means. But unfortunately for Ruben, TYT is full of people who come with heat when they get called out. By far, no former member of TYT calls out staffers as forcefully as I do, but at the time when I started, it was a new thing. And so I was working with Anna Kasparian at the time, and she was reaching her own personal breaking point with Ruben's trashing. And so me being the instigator, I was producing and writing segments for that would signal to the rest of the left that there was blood in the water for Dave Rubin, and that Dave Rubin needs to be embarrassed in order to make an example. Here's an example of one of those clips I produced with Anna.
A few weeks ago on The Young Turks, I addressed my former colleague, Dave Rubin. He was someone I considered a close friend for years until he completely blindsided me with his anti-progressive TYT bashing world tour following his departure from TYT Network. For years, I avoided addressing his lies on air. To be honest, we were such close friends that I thought things would somehow get better. But I made the mistake of thinking he was an honest actor and that the TYT bashing would stop. But I was wrong. I noticed that he had this habit of inviting someone on his show to say the most controversial things, and he would never challenge them. And that was an ongoing pattern. Mike Cernovich, Milo Yiannopoulos, and other questionable characters made regular appearances on his show, and Ruben just let them say whatever they wanted without any pushback.
Does any of that analysis sound familiar? And so we did these clips, and that encouraged other people, the Majority Report, other folks on the left, to pay more attention to Dave Rubin, especially as Dave Rubin was getting ready to write a book. I think Sam Cedar said something along the lines of, I want to make sure that if you even try to publish, or if you search up Dave Rubin and you don't know who he is so thoroughly discredited by his own words that, that's done the job. But it openly just flopped for him. A bunch of other YouTubers caught it as well. But ultimately, you had people being more confrontational about his lifestyle. There's one guest he had that literally freaked out once he found out later in the future that Dave Rubin was actually even gay.
Reference around a liberal. A liberal homosexual says, well, you should accept my lifestyle. But if you say, well, I accept your lifestyle, I just don't want my kid to be one. Well, you're a bit. Well, wait a minute. I accept the fact that you want to be homeless. I don't want my kid to be homeless. I accept the fact that you want to smoke crack. I don't want my kid to smoke crack.
What do we do from here? What do we do from here? Like, I think most people, I know a lot of my audience is going to hear you, really hear you, and go, this is the type of stuff that I think needs to be heard more. And I think that the group of people that are talking about this stuff is actually growing. I do mm-hmm. see this. At the same time, the people who don't want to hear us are getting more and more hysterical because that's all they got left.
Even said, they hate Dave Rubin because he's a gay man with the wrong opinion. Dave Rubin is gay? No! He got a husband? I did not know. I was in his presence. I didn't know. I shook his hand. I sat down with him. Why would y'all tell? Why did y'all tell me before I went on his show? Oh, Stephen, why would you send me this? Oh my God, Stephen, you ruined my day.
Yeah, that was one of his former guests throwing him under the bus. Isn't that? I mean, yes, we feel bad, but isn't that kind of funny? Because he did it to himself. And you already saw the Dave Rubin clip where Prager, with a cigar in his hand, stops just short of telling Rubin that he's a pawn in his own game. But even Ben Shapiro, another fellow Jew along with Dave Rubin and Dennis Prager, outwardly shunned his lifestyle when he literally thought they were friends.
Will you bake Rubin a wedding cake? Okay, so, I mean, my answer is...
Well, I'm married already.
Right, he's married already.
But an anniversary... It was my anniversary last week. An anniversary cake would have been nice.
Right, so the answer is no. And the reason I won't is because as a religious Jew, I do not participate in activities that I believe are sinful.
And he would have done it kosher, the whole thing, man.
Well, yeah, now I feel bad.
He would have done it for you.
You got me this close.
Putting that aside, you can't have David's kosher cake now. If we were having an anniversary party, would you come? If I was inviting all the crew that we all know, and we were just an anniversary party, we're just having a party, and I'll even throw in some kosher food for you to make sure you don't have to bring your own food.
You know, honestly, I'd have to think about it. I'd have to think about it in the same way.
So that's interesting to me, because that's a different thing.
Well, not really, because again, it's if you're a religious person, and again, take it from the religious perspective, the question is, are you glorifying something that you think is sinful?
Yeah.
Are you glorifying sin? God. Dave Rubin is down horrendous. He's trying. Okay, well, we'll make it kosher. We'll make you a thing. Will you come to the wedding? Will you come to the after party? Will you come to the... No. It's a moral issue for me. My religion doesn't care about... My interpretation of our religion doesn't care about our friendship. Dave Rubin used to play pickup basketball with Jank and Ben and Hassan. They would disagree on certain things, but they'd get along. They'd be friends. They generally cared about each other. We didn't know Rubin was this much of a sellout back then. But that's the friendship. Those are the real connections that Dave Rubin missed out on by purposely selling out. And it hurts to watch, but like it doesn't. Because this is the bet he made for himself. One last thing. This is the icing on the cake. His new boss, Glenn Beck, is a very deeply religious person, a Mormon. And he was also employing Glenn Beck and has a very conservative audience. And so he has to ride this line of catering to his conservative audience while not giving in to Dave Rubin's gay lifestyle, but still supporting Dave Rubin. So it's a really weird mix. I'm going to play this last clip. It's a little bit on the longer side. It's 2 minutes, but it's so worth it because of how condescending Glenn Beck is. You have to really imagine that this is one of the clips that really like broke Dave Rubin down at the end of the day.
I get why the right has these, what I would argue are often legitimate fears, because the left does not stop eating civilization.
Correct.
And think about what an unfortunate position that puts us in, because then someone like me can make an announcement like this, then good, decent, thoughtful conservatives, some of faith, maybe some not of faith, whatever it is, could reach out and say, boy, this is what an interesting opportunity, and sure, it's a little different, and whatever, all the love that you and the Blaze guys and everyone else are giving me. And then there's this other part that's legit, which is, if we move the line, they're going to keep going. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
Dave,
I honestly don't, because that has nothing to do with me and how I'm going to live my life.
I think, and this is why I wanted to have you on, because I don't have an answer. I am, you know me, I'm a deeply religious man, and my religion says man and a woman, that is the basic building block of family. We're probably the clearest church on this, because it's been in our doctrine for 200 years. So we're very clear on that. But that's marriage and relationships, and that's what I believe. But I also know God created you just like he created me, flaws and all. I believe I have a gene, they've never found it, that makes me very susceptible to alcoholism, because it runs in my family. So does craziness, but it runs in my family. The same thing with things that I don't understand. And if we can't have a conversation about things that we don't necessarily understand and probably won't until we get to the other side, we have to just work it out together and be able to say, Dave, I disagree, or I don't know what the answer is, but I love you.
You had real friends, and now your boss is comparing your love, the way you live your lifestyle, to alcoholism or something that has to be put up with and dealt. Like, you're deeply flawed, you're wrong for this, but I guess we still have to pity you and love you anyways. Dave Rubin, you're a pathetic son of a bitch. And you made the decisions that have made you ostracized and hated amongst your own community, and you're not even doing anything useful with it. You're not even taking the opportunity to change people's minds about being gay or being part of the LGBTQ community, which would be an incredible flip and thing to turn if that's Dave Rubin's only trick, is to be able to flip his ideology and his opinions. That'd be a really great thing to do, as there's anti-gay and anti-trans legislation that's being passed all throughout the United States right now under the guise of protecting children. Isn't it ironic that Dave Rubin is now caught in the middle of this Republican attack on the LGBTQ community under the guise of keeping children safe, and now Dave Rubin is having children within his gay marriage as a prominent Republican by choice? Wouldn't let that shit happen to me. That's all I can say. Thank you for joining me on this big edition of Power Report. A lot of stuff going on here that I thought was really relevant and important. There's a lot of Ukraine stuff that I know it's a really big thing. It's a really big world thing that we haven't covered and haven't talked about yet. That's because I'm doing a lot of coverage on Good Morning Bad News, so much of it's honestly just like broken my brain. So check that out at Good Morning Bad News or at Good Morning Bad World on TikTok. We're also available on Snapchat as well. Just search those things. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. The show can be found at PowerReport WRLD on Twitter and at PowerReport.world on Instagram. Keep in touch with us there. And we will be back with future episodes in April, including the cannabis episode and the crypto episode that I've been meaning to publish and get out to y'all. So thank you all for being patient with me. Appreciate y'all. Cheers.